Did you know that Christopher Columbus originally sailed across the Atlantic Ocean in order to ask a Mongol Khan to help him fight a war against the Muslims? You see, in the mid-1400s, the Ottoman Empire had quickly become the most important empire in all of Europe. It was the standard for technical innovation and military power in the region, and had the largest Christian population out of any other nation in the world, giving them a huge influence over the European powers in the West who were competing with the Ottomans for legitimacy and authority over all of Christendom. But the Ottomans were just the latest in a long line of Islamic empires which rivaled the Christian powers over the lands surrounding the Mediterranean. And while the Muslims incorporated the Christians and peoples of other religions into their empires, often allowing them their own courts and judges and legal systems, the Christian empires took a different approach to the Muslims and even the Jews living in their lands. You see, when Pope Urban II launched the First Crusade in 1095, an army of crusaders marched from Europe to Palestine, eventually arriving at the gates of Jerusalem and massacring the entire non-Christian population of the city. By that time, Jerusalem had been under the control of the Muslims for over 400 years, and Muslims, Jews, and Christians all lived together within the city walls. But for the crusaders, only the Christians would be allowed to survive. Soon, a crusader culture began to pervade throughout Europe, and many more crusades soon followed. And even though the last official crusade ended in 1272, the crusader culture never really ended. Crusading armies such as the Teutonic Order and the Knights Hospitaller, both of which are still active to this day, continued to wage wars against the Muslims throughout the lifetime of the Ottoman Empire, fighting their last battles towards the end of the 1700s. The Knights Hospitaller was particularly formidable, becoming a major threat to the Ottoman trade routes from their stronghold in Rhodes and preventing the Ottoman capture of Malta in 1565. But there was one city in particular where their influence often goes unmentioned, and yet their presence in that city may have created the most well-known and consequential crusader of them all. In 1451, Christopher Columbus was born in the city of Genoa. The city was one of the naval powers of the Christian world and had become a major hub for ships and soldiers sent to fight the Muslims in North Africa and the Mediterranean Sea. For the first two decades of his life, Columbus lived in Genoa surrounded by stories of war with the Muslims. During that time, he would have seen the treasures held by the San Lorenzo Cathedral, which had been captured during earlier crusades, and the crusaders which regularly passed through the city, invited by the Knights Hospitaller who gave them free food and accommodation. In his own lifetime, Columbus lived through some of the most important Muslim conquests over their Christian rivals. In 1453, when he was just 2 years old, the Ottomans managed to capture Constantinople, securing Europe's main trading hub with the East and becoming the middleman of European trade with India and China. A few years later, when Columbus was 10, the Ottomans followed up this victory by capturing the city of Trebizond, one of the most important Christian strongholds in the Black Sea. Throughout his life, Columbus felt enormous enmity towards the Muslims, and he even married a member of the Order of St. James, a crusader order named after the mythical James Matamoros, meaning James the Moor Slayer. And for the crusaders and their cause, there were two main myths that kept their fight against the Muslims alive. The first myth was born when Marco Polo returned back to Europe from his travels in the Far East in the late 1200s. At some point, he got caught in the middle of a skirmish between the Genoese and the Venetians and ended up in a Genoese prison. And during those few months in captivity, he gave a detailed account of his travels to a fellow inmate who wrote it all down and added it to his own tales and anecdotes, and soon it spread throughout Europe in what was later known as the Travels of Marco Polo. In this manuscript, Rustichello wrote of a Mongol Khan ruling a great kingdom somewhere east of the Muslim lands who wanted to convert to Christianity and help the Christians take Jerusalem back. And honestly, there was some truth to this. A few Mongols had converted to Nestorian Christianity, even though it was a sect of Christianity that the Catholics considered heretical. And on top of that, there had also been a delegation of Mongols that had been baptized by the Pope when they came to discuss an alliance against the Muslim Mamluks. But the location of this mythical Khan remained vague at the time, when the Europeans had no detailed maps of Asia, and in reality, he never actually existed. The second myth, however, proved even more tantalizing. When the Muslims conquered the Iberian Peninsula in the early 700s, the Christians began to spread stories of seven bishops who had managed to escape the peninsula with their followers on the boats that the Muslims had arrived on. They then sailed somewhere into the Atlantic Ocean, which they called the Sea of Darkness, landing on some unknown islands and building seven cities out of the gold that they had rescued from Spain. The Crusaders believed that if they could find these seven cities of gold, they could fund an army that could wipe out the Muslims once and for all. Columbus, in all of his zeal for Christian dominance over the Muslims, truly believed in both of these myths. And while it was clear to him that he would have to sail west to find the seven cities of gold, he soon experienced something so bizarre and significant that made him believe that by sailing west, he could also find the Great Khan too. In 1477, Columbus joined a ship sailing to Iceland on a well-established trade route. On his way back, he stopped in Galway along the west coast of Ireland, where he wrote the following message. "Men of Cathay have come from the west. Of this we have seen many signs, and especially in Galway in Ireland, a man and a woman of extraordinary appearance have come to land on two tree trunks." This word Cathay here was used by the Europeans at the time to mean China. And so what he was saying was that he saw the dead bodies of a man and a woman from China that were lying on two tree trunks that had washed up on the western shores of Ireland. In reality, most likely these were the bodies of two Native Americans, not Chinese, that had been brought over from the Americas by the currents of the Atlantic Ocean. But Columbus didn't know that there was a whole continent yet to be discovered by the Europeans. And so he thought that if these two bodies could make their way from China to Europe, then he too could make his way from Europe to Asia. Columbus began negotiating with various kings of Europe during the 1480s, looking for someone who could fund his expedition across the Atlantic Ocean. And at that exact same moment, the Catholic monarchs of Spain had begun their war against Granada in order to destroy the last Muslim stronghold and remove any Islamic presence from the peninsula. Seeing Queen Isabella as a perfect fit, Columbus followed her from place to place for years until he finally managed to get a meeting with her in 1486. From their devotion to Christianity to their dedication to slaying Moors, it soon became clear that their goals were aligned. And Columbus managed to persuade the queen to take the risk and fund his voyage across the Atlantic Ocean, hoping to find these cities of gold and the Great Khan that could destroy the Muslim empires from the other side. Queen Isabella was convinced, but she was still busy fighting the war against Granada, and she didn't have the money to fund his expedition. So Columbus decided to join her army as a soldier and fight those Muslims in the meantime. For the next 6 years, Columbus fought in many battles against the Muslims, eventually joining in the final siege of Granada and being present when the Sultan of the city finally surrendered. For the Christians, it seemed like they had finally redeemed themselves from having lost Constantinople, and the Pope ordered celebrations for days. The whole of the Christian world was in ecstasy, but still, at that moment, Queen Isabella knew that the Christian empires were still weak compared to the Ottomans and their other Muslim allies. In her mind, the only way to win in the long term would be to try something risky. And so despite her advisors telling her that according to their calculations of the size of the earth, Asia was way further west than Columbus had predicted, she agreed to fund his journey in order to search for the Great Khan and the cities of gold and defeat the Muslims once and for all. And so in that same year, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and when he landed in the Caribbean islands, he thought that he had arrived in Asia. And even after completing four voyages to the west, he would die believing that the mythical Khan had only been a stone's throw away. Like and subscribe for more Muslim Facts.
This was Kublai Khan, who was the emperor of the Mongols. Columbus went to meet this man. Marco Polo had served this man as a youngster. Marco Polo's father and uncle had served this man who was the most powerful ruler on the face of the earth 200 years before Columbus, who somehow didn't manage to figure out that he might not be there. Not only was he long gone, but his empire, the Mongol Empire, which included China at that point, because the Mongols had conquered China, was in disarray.